Welcome to Film Weekly with me, Henry Barnes.
Nobody knows what a pedo looks like. You know, you could be a pedo for all I know. And so could I.
I think I can't help but be pretentious. I think that's why I made a film. I was like, I look at myself and I think, how pretentious am I?
We follow a story about a boy called Boo Boo who can't stop picking his nose, whose bogey becomes radioactive, and he turns into a superhero called Bogey Boy.
From toxic bogeys to social taboos, this week we explore one of London's most dynamic film festivals, the Rush's Soho Shorts Festival 2010. I'll be meeting an impressive range of young directors who are working across the genres, from documentary to social and magical realism. And I'll be dropping in on the festival awards ceremony to talk gongs and future dreams with one half of Basement Jacks and some directors with awards in hand. Also, I'll be putting some directors under pressure as I get some of the frantic 45-second pitches that form the backbone of the festival's pitch masterclass. You can have the best idea in the world, but you're lost if you don't have the gift of the gab.
My name is Mustafa Ksebeti and I'm the writer-director of a project called Knights of London. Knights of London is a 90-minute live-action set in the present, rip-roaring action-adventure comedy surrounding a young boy called Yusuf and his gang of misfits. Basically, what happens is Yusuf gets given this old English explorer's diary which chronicles the quest for Excalibur. So while he's out on a history trip, a school trip to Wales, him and the kids uncover and unlock the many mysteries which leads to Excalibur, and they encounter an evil Lord Le Fay and an underground lair which has like pits, snakes, flaming chariots, flying arrows in it. The film is really about multicultural kids from an inner city learning how to work together, accept each other and accept themselves in order to become better people at the end. And hopefully there'll be a sequel too.
Mustafa on a roll there, and we'll have more pitches later on. One film that screened here at the festival would have been a very hard pitch indeed for writer and director Deborah Haywood. Sis tells the tale of two girls, 6-year-old Lauren and her friend 3-year-old Amy. Highly imaginative and playful, but not getting any adult attention, the girls overhear news of a man on their estate who likes children and promises to give them the two things they both really desire, sweets and a baby. At once comic and tragic, Sis ingeniously looks at a social taboo from a very unique perspective, so I was keen to meet Deborah and find out more about the film.
The paedophile female doctor. No, paedophiles are what like children. I'm a paedophile. Me too.
Deborah, the synopsis makes the film sound quite a sinister affair, but it's not really, is it?
Well, I hope it's not. I hope it's a lot of fun. It's supposed to be about innocence, so, you know, when the kids get wind that there's a man who likes children in the neighbourhood and they're not getting much attention, so in their heads, and that they also hear that, you know, he'll give them sweets and possibly a baby as well, which they both want. Then they decide to track him down and show him the handstands and, you know, hopefully get themselves some sweets and maybe a baby. So I'm hoping it's quite funny as well as quite dark.
It's quite funny because they take their cues from the adults. There's a chronic misunderstanding between the two generations. The kids describe here likes children as something completely different to what the adults are thinking about. And how did you kind of come up with that idea?
I'm not really sure. I can't remember, but I know there was something. I think it was just, you know, how you think of something when you're little and then when you're older, you realise actually it's something else. So somebody was describing somebody to a paedophile and saying, you know, somebody who likes children. And I thought, well, actually, to a child, that, you know, sounds like a nice person, not somebody that you should be staying away from.
The stars of the show are definitely the two girls who play Lauren and Amy. Can you tell me how you cast them and what it was like working with young kids like that?
Well, it's an absolute joy and a nightmare working with them. I fell in love with both of them. They're lovely. And we put flyers in people's houses all around the estate and around the local community. And nobody really turned up. And in fact, we went knocking on doors. But Demi, the elder one, did turn up. And then I went to meet her mum and, you know, talk about the role. And then I met her little sister, Billy. And she was, like, supposed to be really shy and wouldn't speak to anyone. But then when I was doing a little bit of impro and with Demi, Billy was, like, right there on the front row joining in and taking over. And I thought, you know, God, she's got to be the other girl, so...
And how do you bring up the issues of the film with the parents? Because, I mean, we were talking before about how we're not sure if the guy is a paedophile or not. But there is a case that it's quite a serious issue that you're dealing with a very light touch, and it's basically a comedy about a very dark topic. So how did the parents feel about that when you broached it with them?
They were fine. I gave them the script and said, this is what I'm trying to do. You know, you're welcome to be on set all the time during rehearsals and during shooting. And in fact, I cast the mum in the film as well. She's the woman who knocks on the door with the petition.
And where did you shoot it? Where's the estate?
It's shot on Gosley Estate in Swadling Coat, Derbyshire. So it's about 3 miles away from where I grew up.
And can you tell me what you're working on now?
I'm working on a new short called Biatch, which is about a girl who gets off with a best mate's boyfriend. And I'm also working on a feature script called Bite with the Film Council. And so Biatch is a kind of pilot for the feature.
And going back to Sis briefly, the hunt for the paedophile, there's a campaign going on in the film where they ask people to sign up to evict the paedophile. Supposed paedophile from his house. Did something like that actually happen on the estate? Is that based in real life, or is that just something that you've brought into the film yourself?
Well, it didn't happen when I wrote it. I was thinking about I was watching a film one day, and then this image came of myself when I used to like shove rolls of newspaper up my top and walk and put lipstick on, and you know, walk around with big boobs. And my dad caught me once and really, you know, told me off. And then I start. That's where the idea started from. But then when I started casting and talking to people around the estate about it, they said, "Oh, actually, there is a bloke that lives on the estate, and there was all eggs on his windows, and you know, people written pedo over his house and stuff. So, and all the kids go and terrorise him. So it kind of that was a bit weird."
That is the key thing about your film, is that whether he's a paedophile or not, you do actually feel sorry for him. I mean, you know, he breaks down, he starts crying because of these girls are effectively tormenting him.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that you know, I wanted people to feel sorry for him, because I think people are wrongly accused of being a pedo, or if you look a bit weird, you know, it's like, oh yeah, he's a pedo, he looks like a pedo, so yeah, I thought it was interesting, because like, nobody knows what a pedo looks like. You know, you could be a pedo for all I know, and so could I.
And can I just ask you a bit about presenting your film to other people? How does it feel to see a whole cinema full of people watch a short film that you might have made in a very kind of small environment, a home environment, and taking it out to a big city like London?
Well, it's just, I don't know. I haven't seen it here yet. I'm going tonight and on Wednesday, but I really just hope that people enjoy it, and that they hopefully find it funny and also, you know, interesting as well. But I just hope that they love the girls as well, because they were just such a joy, and I think that, you know, their little faces and their little spirits really come through on the film, and for me, you know, they're just an absolute pleasure.
And finally, is there any message behind the film at all, other than it being an enjoyable comedy?
Henry, don't do this to me. I don't think there's a message. Maybe there is, but that's for other people to work out.
Thank you very much, Deborah Hayward. Another filmmaker who may take a prize and most definitely brings a fresh perspective to the screen is Remy Weeks. His film, Exhale, is an emotionally intensive look at a young black man caught between sexual identity and a culture of machismo. Weeks has a masterly style, and the brooding intensity of Exhale really packs a punch.
What's wrong with you today?
You know what my boys would say if they saw you, fam? Saying this for your own good, innit? People like you get fucked where I live, bro. I ain't being funny. People on the street look at you because you look like a prick. It's just baffling, bro. That's all. Look, game, man.
I know how I look.
Just baffling.
Remy, can you tell us a little bit about how your film opens? It's a fairly explosive opening for the lead character.
Yes, my protagonist opens with the news that he's HIV positive, and it's about his, about how he accepts this quite shattering news.
And he seems to come from a community in a city, London, a young black kid being told he's HIV positive. It seems to come from a community that would find his illness perhaps hard to understand or hard to tolerate?
I guess. I think, more importantly, this film was more of a meditation on young black men and their sexuality and how anxious it can be at times in a world where masculinity is very much valued. So I'm kind of playing about with that a bit.
Can you tell us about the other character in the film?
Our character channels his fear, I guess, on a boy called Chris, who's more sympathetic, but instead of finding console in him, he rejects him.
Well, Chris really interested me as a character because you don't tend to see many middle-class black, young black people in mainstream British cinema at the moment. Have you got any idea why that is?
It's so much more exciting, I guess, for the average viewer to see young kids with guns or young kids killing people. And I think it's an audience thing. I think people are scared there's not an audience out there that would appreciate seeing middle-class black people. But, you know, I'm one. I can assure you they exist.
And one thing that really impressed me about Exhale, perhaps compared to your earlier film, which was called Them Angry Girl, is that right?
Yeah.
I watched it online. One thing that really impressed me about Exhale in comparison to your earlier stuff is that you didn't really feel the need to cram it full of events. It's actually quite a simple little film in that there isn't a lot that goes on, but it says a lot at the same time.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to do. I just wanted to play with just feeling and emotion. I decided that I didn't want hardly any dialogue. I just wanted actors to act without having to feel like they're jumping from, I don't know, scene to scene, from scenario. I just wanted to have two people in the room in a way and hope or try and create drama out of that.
And I'm turning into a bit of a fanboy here, but another early film that you did that was shown on ITV was Les Artistes.
Yes.
And what I liked about that film in particular was you were almost taking the piss out of the idea that filmmaking itself or making art is a pretentious topic and it's a pretentious thing to do. Do you feel like it's a struggle in your own work to be inventive rather than pretentious?
I think I can't help but be pretentious. I think that's why I made the film. I was like, I look at myself and I think, how pretentious am I in my silly vintage clothing and stuff. I'm like, I'm awful. That's why I made that film, was just to make fun of myself, I think.
So you're very self-conscious whilst you're making films as well, that they are relating to your life? Or?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I hope that I'm not pretentious enough that I just don't see anything but myself. I hope that I can channel a larger feeling, a larger mood than just what I'm feeling at the moment. So in that way, I hope I'm not pretentious.
My name is Michael Yanni. The story is called The Story of Bogey Boy. It's about the tyrannical voice of health and safety basically dictating, you know, an obsession with too much hygiene. And we follow a story about a boy called Boo Boo who can't stop picking his nose, whose bogey becomes radioactive, and he turns into a superhero called Bogey Boy and becomes a savior to the rejected and antibody to all known viruses, and in turn teams up with a superhero buddy called Captain Cucker, and they both rid the world from a nasty little virus.
All right, time's up. Thank you very much, Michael.
Are you going then?
Yeah. Groundsman. Private girls' school. Accommodation and 20k a year. Sounds all right, doesn't it? Hey?
You know, the longer you leave it, the worse it'll be. Les, I don't drag it out when it's my turn.
I'm going.
Mark Benton there in a scene from Two Men in a Car Park by Federico Fuccini. Federico has two films screening at the festival, and couplets seem to be his theme. Two Men in a Car Park and Two Ladies on a Hill are both films that take seemingly normal situations and give them a surreal twist, and both are superbly made. I met up with Federico to learn a bit more about how to make a good idea look great on a small budget.
You've got to do it yourself, with your own money, or to start with anyway. And then hopefully eventually someone will invest in your work. That's the plan, otherwise I'm not going to last that many more years. So.
Can we talk a little bit about funding? How did you get money together for these films?
Through doing boring corporate work, really. I do, you know, kind of do I edit and then I also direct corporate videos and just save the money that way. And then, as I say, you know, the budgets are small, and I've got good production values because I've got a good team over the kind of the last couple of years. I've built up a good team of people that are prepared to work for very little or nothing, even just. And so the money just goes essentially where it's needed, like for the talent and maybe locations if required. So I keep the budget right down to minimum, and I can only afford like a day shoot at the moment. So,
because you have worked with what people would call names in terms of actors, you had Mark Benson working on Two Men in a Car Park. I mean, how did you get people like that to spend their time on your work?
Well, I think firstly they have to be attracted to the script. So you'll send the agent the script because the actors won't even get to see it unless the agent thinks it's worthwhile or worth a look at. So you have to kind of win the agent over. And if they enjoy the script and think there's something in it for their actor, you know, to flex their muscles and what have you, then they'll pass it on. Obviously, you have to offer some money. It's not the kind of money that they're used to, perhaps, but it can't be a complete, you know, piss take either. It's got to be something which kind of reflects their kind of status and in their career. So if they feel that they're being paid a decent amount and the script's good, then they feel it's something serious, and then the likely outcome's going to be worth their while. And you've got to aim high. So you have your kind of wish list of actors you'd really like, and then so you shouldn't be afraid. You can contact their agents, who can be quite frightening people, and then you kind of work. You know, you kind of cross out names on the list and kind of work downwards. That's how it works.
So it's about having that confidence in your own work as well, that it's good enough to present to these people.
That's exactly what it is, and people can feel, they can hear the confidence in your voice if you believe in the project.
And is the ultimate goal to get to features, or does that not really figure for you at the moment?
Of course, definitely, it really is, but I'm in no rush. I mean, for me, when I do get the money together to make my first feature, I really intend it to be a success. I'm in no rush to get there just yet. Maybe another couple of years and then I'll be ready. I think there's too many people who are in a desperate rush to get there, and they're not ready as directors. They're really not ready. They've got to practice more. They've got to get the experience in. So I recognise that, and I'm very happy to do another couple of shorts.
Well, Federico Forcini did go on to win the Best Newcomer Award, and is a name to watch out for. One of the people handing out awards was none other than Felix Buxton, one half of the legendary Basement Jacks. Felix handed out the gong for Best Music Video, which was won by Emil Nava for his work on Our House is Dadless by the band Kid British. I caught up with Felix after the awards to hear his perspective on the short form in film and his particular creative interest in the festival. Felix, on stage you told us that last year you picked up some people and worked with them on your live show and on your videos.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see anything this year that you felt could take on your live show for the next year?
Well, I'm going to go and see all the winners tomorrow. I mean, it's bad in a way just to see the winners because you're not getting a balanced view of everything. And it's not always the winners are the best, you know. But last year I came to the Animation Festival and... yeah, well, this year I'm going to see the winners in all categories, which I'd love to see all of it, actually. It's just one of those things I didn't realise it was on until they called me to do this. So I'll kind of miss some of the bits. But, yeah, I think it's great. There's so much creativity, and you can see such a breadth of work of, like, all kind of styles. And
what do you say to people who haven't seen short films before, and how would you convince them to come and watch?
A lot of the blockbusters you see, the American blockbusters, why not always have a British or European short film first? I think we should do that and implement that from this next year, because let's enjoy cinema and all the creativity and not just watch the kind of dumb big movies.
And presumably that's what you working with these new artists is about. It's about getting their work out there through the name of Basement Jacks as well.
Yeah, well, for us it's a chance to work with exciting people and people who are kind of pushing the envelope and doing something new, and to give them a chance. And for us it's great as well, you know. It's kind of we want to do stuff that's cool and innovative, and you know, so it's great for us, great for them. So
excellent. Felix, thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers.
Alright, my name is Arno Hazebrook. I'm producer of Mavericks Film, and the title of the film is Snowbleed. So Snowbleed is a supernatural horror film set up in the Andean Mountains in Argentina. It's about a group of international students from Berkeley University and their professor who go there for a research and snowboarding trip and end up stuck on that mountain when they miss the last lift. Now, soon it gets dark and they find they're not the only person on the mountain, and actually something else is roaming out there that doesn't allow them to be on it, and one by one they start to die, unfortunately. this takes us through the night, a whole set of scenarios, adventures, epic shots, a lot of snowboarding is involved as well.
I have to rush you.
Oh, damn it! And you know the one girl, hopefully she survives at the end, because for her it's overcoming a psychological trauma of having lost a little.
All right, time's up. Thank you very much.
All right, cheers, bye.
Well, from snowboarding horror to the arid and austere landscape of northern Uganda, Unearthing the Pen is a documentary that traces the effect of a tribal curse on the written word and the longing of a young goat herder to learn to read and write. The film is a strikingly visual piece by Carol Salter, a documentary maker with a real cinematic feel and one of the best of a very strong documentary category. I met up with Carol at the ICA Cafe to unearth the story behind Unearthing the Pen.
Including our country of Uganda. Now from here, can we identify our country of Uganda also? From the
world, So I'm here in the ICA cafeteria with Carol Salter, who's the director of Unearthing the Pen. Carol, can you tell us the origins of this story?
It's set in northern Uganda, in a very remote place called Kadido. Well, I was out in Uganda making another film, and I came across numerous children who really wanted to go to school, but they couldn't. And following from that, I discovered that their elders, 40 years ago, had buried pen, symbolic, and put a symbolic curse on education. The reason they put a curse on the pen was they said the white people came and enlisted their children to fight in their wars.
And is this World War One that we're talking about
now? No, I think it's the Second World War.
The Second World War.
Yes.
It's remarkable, I felt watching it, because it's almost folklore is affecting this whole society. It's a little story that they've made for themselves, and it's such a powerful curse in this way. Can you talk a little bit about how this is affecting the particular individual that you follow in the documentary, your protagonist?
Well, I think it's just an overall fear that the community have, that as soon as their children have an education, they'll lose them. They might move away. I discovered Lo Chin, who's the protagonist. He was just so desperate to go to school, and he took his goat herding very, very seriously, and he would do anything to go to school. He is now actually at school. I have sponsored him now.
And there's a very moving scene where there's a school teacher listing off the costs of going to school in that particular part of the country, and you see Lo Chin's face, and he's desperately trying to find a way that he can express that he can pay this money. What can children do in that situation other than getting a sponsor? Is that the only resort that they can take?
When I was making the film, I was thinking about how I could have a happy ending or conclusion, and I was filming it. And I thought, oh yes, my final scene will be him at school, and then I thought, well, actually, that isn't his situation. You know, there's not actually any means that he can get to school. And as it being a documentary, I realised that actually the truth of the matter is that he would still be working as a goat herder.
But you said that you sponsored him, so in a way you've affected your own story?
Basically, when I was making the other... when I was filming before, I'd actually already funded my translator to go to secondary school. He'd only managed to go to primary school. And I... basically, as time went on, I carried on sponsoring more children. And so I felt it was only fair, after making a film about Lo Chin, that he would then be able to fulfil his dream.
He struck it lucky, because he's an incredibly charismatic young man, even though he's very quiet. You get this great sense of somebody who is fighting to get where he wants to be.
Yes, I think what's interesting about Lo Chin is he has a mixture of wisdom. You know, there's times where I feel that he's very, very grown up, and then incredible naivety. You know, he really didn't know much about the world, you know, so he'd never been in a car, he'd never really been into town much, or when he did, it was a very kind of important experience for him.
Are you still in touch with Lo Chin, and what's he doing now, if so?
Lo Chin's loving school, he's doing really, really well, and I think maybe one day I'll get a letter from him in English.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Carol Salter.
Well, one of the final awards was Best Short, and I was delighted, if not surprised, to see that Deborah Hayward Sist at the top prize. So I tracked Deborah down outside a bustling Soho club to get her reaction.
We're back with Deborah Hayward. Deborah,
You've just won the Best Short Award. You've been mobbed outside at the after party. Can you tell me how it feels to win the award?
Sorry. It feels absolutely amazing. It's like unreal. And I'm shocked. I'm going to burp.
Is this your first award then?
Yeah. Ever.
And you had a little message for Jeremy Hunt in your acceptance speech. Can you tell us what that was?
Well, Tina thanked the Film Council, and which we wanted to thank the Film Council. Not that we planned anything. But then I think we thanked Jeremy Hunt for screwing us over. So basically, the Film Council have put us on the first rung of the ladder, and then Jeremy Hunt knocked the frigging wall down. So our ladder fell on the floor.
So what does that mean for you now?
I don't know. I don't know whether it's like, is the future screwed? I don't know. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I mean, where's all the new filmmakers going to come from now? Because like they were like our support system, do you know what I mean?
So how does it feel to have your film up there on a big screen with have big audiences watching it, to have the tag award-winning, whatever that may mean? Does it actually mean anything to you, or is that just another positive aspect of making films?
No, I don't know. It means everything. I mean, it means that like actually people like what we're doing, and you know, to have that acknowledged, because all the time you're doubting yourself and you're just thinking, is this shit, am I shit? And then for like people to laugh, when they were laughing tonight, I was like, oh god, it's just like the best drug ever. I really want another like injection of that.
So it's that affirmation that what you find funny or what you find relevant is the same for other people watching the film as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I thought when I was doing it, I just thought, well, I'll just do what makes me laugh, and then like hopefully somebody else will laugh, and they did, so.
Well, I hope very much that you keep us laughing for a long time to come. Film Council, I know. Deborah Haywood, thank you very much for your time.
I love you, Henry.
Congratulations, Deborah Haywood, talented director and proof positive that winning award can send you slightly batty. Well, I hope you've enjoyed my foray into the Rush's Soho Shorts Festival. Do check out the Film Weekly blog at guardian.co.uk/filmweekly or our Facebook fan page, Film Weekly Fans, for more information on Rush's and links to all the films featured in this week's show. The music featured on this week's podcast is by Music by Association, aka Film Weekly producer Jason Phipps. But from me, Henry Barnes, and Jason, it's a goodbye and hail to the shore.